Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. I'm in an awfully good mood today. I would say on a scale of 1 to 2, I am definitely in the high ones today. So I'm feeling awfully good about that. If you are just crawling out of bed this morning, I'm guessing you are getting up off a mattress you own. And I found this story to be quite interesting. In the Bay Area, mattress rentals are popping up as rents remain high. And that caught my attention. And here's what it is. You can rent a mattress. A twin foam mattress in Berkeley is going for $880 a month. That comes out to about $28 a night. Now, it doesn't sound too bad, except here's the catch. You must share the room and sleep in between two other mattress renters who are merely inches away from one another on the carpeted flooring. And according to Rent Jungle, a one-bedroom apartment in Berkeley is renting for an average of nearly $2,600 a month. So people are just going for $880. I can get a foam mattress to sleep on the floor between these two other people.
Or you could like not live in Berkeley, I guess.
I think that's probably the right solution, if you want my opinion.
No offense to anyone who might be listening from Berkeley.
Yeah. And Americans are feeling employment drug tests on the rise. According to Quest Diagnostics, which performs drug screenings, Americans who failed a drug test is at its highest levels in over a decade. More than 9% of potential employees tested positive for at least one drug. That's kind of a scary thought. More people are showing up to work medicated, hopefully with hopefully prescription medications. But, I mean, I only take Flintstone vitamins, and I think this morning I took a Dino. It was a Dino or a Barney Rubble. I can't remember. But it was one of the two. So if if I got tested for Dino, I would be quite upset. Anyway, I want to start with a passage from 1 Timothy 2. In verse 5, it says, "For there is one God and one mediator between God and mankind, the man Christ Jesus, who gave himself as a ransom for all people." Coming up just after the break, we're going to talk to Gabe Lyons. Gabe started Q, which was birthed out of his vision to see Christians, especially leaders, recover a vision for their responsibility to renew and restore cultures. And we're going to talk about Rod Dreher's book that I talked to Rod yesterday, The Benedict Option, and Gabe's got some very interesting insight to that book as it's kind of controversial right now. So we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Gabe Lyons from Q. It is 6 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Gabe Lyons really set out to reintroduce Christians to what was kind of missing in recent decades from an American expression of Christian faithfulness. He wanted to have people value both personal and cultural renewal, not one over the other. So he's doing it both and giving us a great lesson. He is central to the vision of Q, and they have their big conference coming up next April, so we're always glad to check in with Gabe. Thanks for being on the show. Gabe, good morning.
Good to be back with you.
Thanks.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. I had a great talk with your wife, Rebecca. She's amazing. But you probably already know that. Why don't I tell you something you don't know, right?
Right. All right.
So I had Rod Dreher on yesterday. He's got a book, The Benedict Option, pretty controversial. You tweeted about something in response to it. And tell our listeners a little bit about what Rod's book is about and how you responded to it.
Well, Rod's book, The Benedict Option, is something he's been working on for over 3 years. I've known Rod for about that long. And so it's been a conversation we've been having over those many, many years. But for those listeners who don't understand what the Benedict Option is, essentially, Rod's an Orthodox Christian, and he proposes that Christians need to, you know, in many ways, kind of gird up our own sort of institutions, our families, our school, the way we're educating our children, the way we're doing discipleship in our churches, that we need to double down and get serious on what that looks like, or we're a generation away from seeing the Christian faith not really handed down to a new generation, and we're in danger of losing it in Western society. And so the controversy around it is just many, well, I wouldn't say many, just some saying, oh, this is too alarmist. You know, why is this man saying we should withdraw from culture instead of engaging culture? And so I think that's where the controversial conversations have been is what is the role of a Christian today in a modern culture where we see the culture changing quite a bit? We see a lot of things in the culture that maybe as Christians we question or we don't think are that good. And what do we do? Do we confront it? You know, do we kind of head for the hills as some would caricature Rod's message as saying? But because I've been in this process with Rod and I really appreciate what he has to say and offer to this, I actually see the book as an incredible resource and a great project for Christians to get together and read and for leaders to read and to consider what are we doing to shore up what it means to be faithful so that we actually have something to offer to the wider world.
Gabe, do you think that was just kind of a hook for the book, just to create a little bit of controversy? Talking to Rod, I didn't get any sense that we're supposed to go isolate.
No, exactly. And I think it's a huge misconception people have had about the Benedict option that he proposes. Many who had not read the book didn't understand exactly what he was proposing or how he was proposing it, who immediately sort of jumped on his perspective, assuming that he said we just need to leave the culture. And as you know from talking with Rod, that's not at all what he's saying.
Not at all.
We need to be faithfully present in every area of culture, but we need to do the hard work. You know, if you're looking at it on a percentage scale, if 50% of our life is lived out in the world, the other 50%, we better be serious about how we're strengthening ourselves, how we're becoming more like Christ, mm-hmm. how we're practicing the faith. So we actually, you know, can withstand what the temptations, we can withstand the pressures, we can actually have conviction and courage the way, you know, we see in the biblical stories of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they're confronted, that there was something more substantive there than just sort of casual Christianity. And he's really pushing against this casual Christianity that's really been the mainstay in American life for the last few decades.
Mm-hmm. If I can point out to our listeners, what Dreher, I think, pointed out was that St. Benedict was really horrified by the moral chaos after the fall of Rome. So he was trying to get the Christian communities to live their lives based on order and stability, prayer, hospitality. And he thought that through that kind of concentration, they actually were able to not only save Christianity in that time, but most of Western civilization. So the whole goal was to rebuild themselves so they could serve the world.
Yeah.
And does it not seem that that's kind of where we're at now, Gabe? Once again?
Well, yeah, and that's why I was a big endorser of his book. And we had Rod actually gave this talk, his first public talk on this 3 years ago at a Q conference called the Benedict Option. So your listeners can go actually at qideas.org and watch Rod give an 18-minute presentation on this. And that is exactly why I like what he's talking about, because if we want to shape culture, as Andy Crouch, who's a wonderful author, has said for many, many years, you don't change culture by critiquing it, by condemning it. You actually change it by creating new culture. And I think what Rod's proposing is as the church, what kind of culture are we creating right now? What do our disciples look like? Are we living different lives? I mean, the data that David Kinnaman and I have looked at in our book, Good Faith, would suggest that most Christians, almost, let's say if 80% of the culture believes that individualism and pursuing my own desires is what will bring me fulfillment, you know, 60% of Christians agree with that statement. And that's not a true statement. That's a very secular mentality. It's a new kind of morality. It's not based on God's vision for how we pursue what life's about and how we have fulfillment. We actually have fulfillment by giving our lives away, not by just doing whatever we desire. Those kinds of things show up, and that's what he's pointing out, is the Christian church has kind of gone off the rails in terms of offering something different to the world, and we better get serious about it. And so I'm not one to think we shouldn't take it lightly. I think Rod would say, hey, look, sure, call me an alarmist, but I do want to sound an alarm. That's my point, is we have gotten so sucked into this way of life that we don't recognize how big of a deal this is. And we need to think about this as a big deal and change some of our behaviors, our actions, our structures, how we're thinking about church, And so as somebody who cares a lot about the church and the future of the church in American life, I've seen these same signs. I've been trying to sound alarms, perhaps in some different ways. And so I always welcome a brother into that conversation who's offering not just critique of the church, but actually offering wonderful historical analysis and solutions that I think most people would go, yeah, that makes sense. We should be doing a lot of these things. And it's been a while since I've heard somebody talk about it.
Yeah. He says things like recover church discipline, evangelize with goodness and beauty, be willing to be a nonconformist. If those are setting off alarms, I'm listening.
That's right. I mean, that's the thing about this is it's for people who read the book, and you mentioned a tweet. I tweeted out these 43 proposals that he makes in this book. So it's really simple bullet points people could read. And if you go to @GabeLyons on Twitter, you can just click in there and see what he's proposing related to technology, how we think about sexuality, how we think about work, how we think about the church, community, education. And it's very practical.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to consider it.
Gabe, let's pick a couple of those and talk about them after the break, because this is there's so much stuff. So it's 16 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back with Gabe Lyons. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio Mornings. Bill Arnold. Be back in a minute. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Gabe Lyons this morning. We're talking about the Benedict Option, Rob Dreher's book. And Gabe, you sort of put together 43 proposals, and you put it on your Twitter site. People can go there, but I'd like you to pick a couple of them to discuss. So what would you like to talk about from these 43 proposals?
Well, I think one of the ideas he proposes is establish the home as a domestic monastery.
Yes.
Okay. So that for some people would sound, man, that sounds really weird, but appreciating that he's talking about Benedict, which was very much about a monastic community. He suggests, hey, our family should be doing a few things. We should be doing daily family worship. So we should be spending time praying together, worshiping God together, reading scripture together, mutual love and service, and then showing hospitality to other people. Well, these feel basic, and yet I think for many of us who are very busy, with a lot going on, I have three children myself, that takes complete intentionality. Mm-hmm. It takes getting up early in the morning and spending that time with them, or it takes in the evenings, as our family did last night, coming together and saying, no, after dinner, we're going to spend an hour together, specifically as a family, having these kinds of conversations and talking about Lent at this moment. And what does that mean? And can we trust God's promises in the future if we can understand best how Isaiah predicts what's happening in the New Testament and having those kind of conversations with our kids? Those are the kinds of things that I grew up and my parents, I mean, before we went to bed every night, there was prayer, and we, you know, I slept through half of it, but everybody in the family went around and prayed together, and we called it family altar. You know, uh-huh. It's like this really basic thing, and yet it was something I could rely on. It was there, and yet I find in my own family that doesn't just happen naturally. Those moments happen because we're going to be super intentional about it, and you better believe people of other faiths, the Muslim faith and many other faiths, they take seriously how they're raising their kids to understand and appreciate what they believe, what their confession is, how they're going to approach the world. But for some reason, many evangelical Christians, we've gotten away with not taking it that seriously. And I think it's showing up in life right now. It's showing up as our millennials, 6 out of 10 of our 18 to 34 year olds have walked away from the church once they kind of graduate out of the church. Well, that should sound off alarm bells that something's not going well in what we're doing. So that, I think that's a critical one. I think, for one that, I've talked about a lot lately is technology. So mm-hmm. He basically says, look, practice some forms of digital fasting, you know, be willing to question the morality of technological developments. Don't use social media in worship. Do more things with your hands. Do not assume that all scientific progress is good. Again, these are just, man, this is good thinking.
This is, and in
today's time, it's countercultural. So some go, man, why should I have to think about phones or I'll just use whatever? Well, no, if we want to offer something to the world in areas where they've got questions, then we're probably going to have some practices in our life and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you know, he deals with these very practical things. It's not just this 30,000-foot view, but he says very practically, here's what you need to do.
Well, we create technology, then it turns around and recreates us. So I think we have to be very intentional about what we let into our world. And he talks about the internet can be an ecosystem of distraction. And, you know, when you were talking about your parents praying with you at night, I'm just picturing maybe your mom or dad sort of sitting on your bed in a dark room praying and thinking that's a time, that's a pretty sacred time for a kid when he can feel really safe and he can share stuff with parents. And that's really relationship building time. And it's probably awfully important that stay a part of parenting and childhood.
Yeah. And I think it's those little moments that in a very busy world and busy lives for all of us, it's unselfish to go spend that time with your child, you know, when you're tired and when maybe you want to get in your own bed or you have other things to do and you just can't wait till the kids are finally in bed so you can do them. Well, it's unselfish act to go say, no, I'm actually going to spend 15 minutes right now talking with my son tonight and seeing how his day's gone and really listening to things he's thinking about. And you walk away from it going, I'm so glad I did that. That was so light. But I feel like the enemy sort of tempts us and says, no, stay away. Don't build that intimacy. Don't build that relationship. Go do something else. And so this is the opportunity, I think, is that a lot of what Rod's talking about, a lot of what we talk about at Q, a lot of what I've written about with David Kinnaman, is essentially some very basic ideas that Christians have practiced throughout all of time. And it's funny now to me that when you remind people that these are the basic practices of Christianity, there can be a big uproar of controversy that you're even stating anything new. And in fact, all you're doing is fighting for the basics, how Christians have always lived life. But for some, they've not heard it that way. They've not thought of the Christian faith as something where we need to have these kind of really, you know, rigorous efforts and standards. And, you know, everybody's so fearful of it becoming religious, you know, and not having meaning that we avoid some of these basic practices that are actually essential to cultivating our souls, our relationship with God, and actually being a part of what he's really trying to do in the world in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Gabe, we have 30 seconds left. Tell us about the Q conference coming up in April.
Well, we do our Q conference once a year. This will be our 11th year. We're going to have 2,000 people descending on Nashville, Tennessee, April 26th to 28th, hearing over 40 talks. Rod Dreher is one of those who will be with us. Andy Crouch, Lisa Turkhurst, and Boss Camp. So many leaders, many that you wouldn't have heard their names, but they're experts in their different fields or vocations. And they come and give presentations at Q, 9-minute talks, 18-minute talks. We create all kinds of city experiences in the evenings where you get to know people, but get to participate in culture and get to have conversations about these substantive kinds of topics. So for any Christian, this isn't just for pastors. These are for leaders in business and media, journalism, technology. Like any Christian who's saying, man, I'm trying to find my tribe. I'm trying to find people who are talking about the things you guys are talking about every morning and trying to work through this with other leaders. The Q conference is the place to do that. And people can learn more about that and register. We're about 4 weeks out, qideas.org/2017. And we'd love to have the people join us. We still have probably about 200 seats left that will fill up in the next couple of weeks. So if anybody's interested, we'd love to have you.
That's awesome. Gabe, thanks so much for being on the show and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. All right, it's 25 minutes after the hour. After a short break, we'll be right back. Good morning. It's 28 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. We're going to take a little news break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Arthur Rasko, director of Facing Darkness, this new movie that's coming out, I think it's Thursday. Look forward to that in just a few minutes. Be back.
If we truly want spiritual renewal in this country, we're going to have to spend time praying. Fervent, intentional prayer. This is Jim Garlow. And let me remind us, prayer isn't overcoming reluctancy in God. It's not persuading him to do something he's unwilling to do. It's implementing his will. We're not begging God to do something he doesn't want to do. Christian author Andrew Murray wrote, "We must begin to believe that God, in the mystery of prayer, has entrusted us with a force that can move the heavenly world and can bring its power down to earth. A force that changes history, that changes culture, We need to pray now for our nation, our leaders, our families, our churches, and our institutions. And by the way, prayer doesn't mean we don't act, not at all. We pray first. Action comes out of that praying. This is Jim Garlow, and there's always more of these kind of stories at jimgarlow.com.
It's 34 minutes after the hour. Movie directors seldom sleep. And when they have an opening of their movie, they sleep even less. So it's no problem to have Arthur Rasko on the show this morning. Arthur, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So nice to have you on the program. Congratulations, Facing Darkness. The big event is this week, correct?
Absolutely. Thursday night.
That's very exciting. Tell our listeners a little bit about the movie.
So Facing Darkness is a film about the response of Samaritan's Purse to the Ebola epidemic in 2014. One of our doctors, Dr. Kent Brantley, people might remember seeing headlines about an American doctor infected with Ebola and then another American missionary, Nancy Reiple, being infected with Ebola in July of 2014. And this is the story about those people who got Ebola while they were trying to fight it and treat patients with the disease, and then their emergency evacuation from Liberia to the U.S., their experimental treatment, and just the miraculous set of circumstances that came together and really just in a way that only God could orchestrate it. And so we just wanted to tell this true story to give God, to share his faithfulness, to share his goodness of what he did for Kent, for Nancy, and for countless others through this extraordinary circumstance.
Arthur, I'm scared by the word flu season, so the word Ebola is way scarier. So when I was following that in 2014, and when I watched the trailer to this film, my heart started racing. It is an amazing story. I'm curious, though. The central theme of Facing Darkness is that faith doesn't make you safe. I mean, how do you want people in general, and Christians in particular, to react to that?
You know, I think people want to be challenged in their faith. Is their faith really real? Will their faith get them through whatever circumstance they're challenged, they're challenged with? Will God work? And so this is a story, a tumultuous story, but yet a story of hope to show how God works through prayer, God works through people and circumstances. And yes, Dr. Kent Brantley, he talks about how, people ask him, did his faith heal him? Well, he says, in a very real way, here's what I do know. It was because of my faith that I got Ebola. It was because of my faith that I was in West Africa treating Ebola patients. It was because of my faith that I went, and I went into harm's way because I wanted to help people, because I know what Jesus did for me on the cross. And so I want to share that love with others, even in the most trying and desperate of circumstances. It's sort of, it's a modern-day Good Samaritan story, right, of helping people along the roadside that were left dying and needing desperate, desperate help. And so that faith, in Christ, that puts us sometimes in difficult circumstances, but God promises that he'll be with us through those trials, through those times. And so that's what we want people to walk away with, is that no matter what, God is with you, and God will help give you what you need to remain faithful to him throughout these circumstances.
Arthur, I don't use the word hero very often, but I look at what Dr. Brantley and others did, and we don't shake hands with somebody who's got the sniffles, and he's going into Liberia treating people with Ebola. I mean, this is amazing.
And Dr. Brantley is amazing, and this is a it's not just him, but it was the whole, in at the end of our film, if people stay through the end of our film, we have a list of 700 names. Most of them actually are Liberian, Liberian Samaritan's Purse workers that went and helped in the fight against Ebola. And so they're all heroes, you know, all of them, you know. Dr. Brantley, you know, he had to leave in a little bit of a rush, you know, when he got Ebola. But yet, you know, the Liberian staff, they stayed. Samaritan's Purse, Liberian staff stayed and helped their own people throughout the whole Ebola crisis. And really, they're the heroes.
And Dr. Brantley himself is in the movie, isn't he?
Absolutely, absolutely. He's very candid. He shares his story. He shares what it was like going through Ebola, and he's very candid about everybody. He's extremely candid about their faith, about their fears through this. Even Reverend Franklin Graham, the president and CEO of Samaritan's Purse, he talks about that day, that summer day, when he got notification that one of his own doctors, Dr. Kent Brantley, was tested positive for Ebola, and he's extremely honest about what was going through his head during that time.
Yeah, it's riveting. All right, let's get back to how Christians react to fear, and how do we put fear and compassion together? Because sometimes when you get so afraid, you withdraw, and it's hard to be compassionate. So how do we put those two together?
You know that's such a great question, because I think what we need to do, and what this story so beautifully illustrates, is that if we choose compassion first, you know, and in this circumstance of treating Ebola patients, those that you know, if we that need our help, if we see them as our, as Dr. Brantley says, our mother, our father, our sister, our brother, if we choose compassion first, that then can give us a reason why to go into harm's way, to go and to face our fears, and that can give us courage to overcome those fears. And so I think that's what we see in this story, is the power of choosing compassion over fear, and we see that choosing compassion can give us a courage to overcome that fear, and that can be helping people across an ocean. It could be helping people in a deadly epidemic. It could be helping people across the street, mm-hmm. down the hallway, people that we know that, gosh, I don't know about that person, whatever. I'm kind of nervous about, you know, listen, they need our help. We need to put compassion ahead of fear and go and to be motivated by that why, that reason can give us a courage to do powerful, powerful things. And I think that story, that is illustrated very powerfully in this film, Facing Darkness, coming out Thursday.
I think we sometimes forget that disease spread so aggressively in Liberia. I think more than 11,000 people died. And what do you hope people are talking about as they go home from the movie?
You know, I hope people that are inspired to see how God works through prayer, that God, you know, works through people and circumstances. You know, this story is, the way it unfolds is really just truly amazing, and it's one that, it's a story only God could script, because to see the way everything comes together and in spite of difficulties and challenges, it's beautiful, and I think that people will be inspired by this, and we're hoping that this film inspires a new generation of missionaries to go out into the mission field, to go out and help people, you know, and choose compassion over fear. And really, the same God that got us through Ebola can get people through whatever challenges and difficulties that they're facing in their lives, whatever darkness, as it were, that people might be facing. God can help them through that, and the word says that, the scripture says that God will be with them, that he will never leave, never forsake them, and he'll be with them through these challenges. And so we want people to be inspired by that, to feel encouraged by this, and just to know that, you know, the story's not over. You know, 2014 seems like it was a long time ago, but really, you know, the after effects of Ebola are still present in terms of People are traumatized. People are still recovering from this in Liberia, and Samaritan's Purse is still on the ground there helping. Nancy Ripoll, who is featured in this film, she's on the ground. She's there in Liberia doing trauma counseling and healing for people because she's sharing her own story of survival through it and is able to encourage other Liberian survivors as well.
Arthur, we just have a few seconds left. How can people see the movie?
Yeah, so people can see the movie. It's Thursday, March 30th. People can go to facingdarknessmovie.com for a list of theaters and tickets. And also because of audience response so far, we actually have an encore night Monday, April 10th. So people will have two nights only to see this, Thursday, March 30th, this Thursday, or Monday, April 10th. And so we're hoping that people come out, support this film, and really see how God worked in an amazing way.
I am proud of you, Arthur. Thank you so much. Arthur Rasko, the director of the movie. We'll take a short break and be right back. Seven minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here. One of the things I like about this job, and there's many, is that I get to talk to my friends, which is really kind of nice. Jane Peterson is a dual citizen of both the U.S. and the U.K. She is a CNN business news reporter and presenter in London, was, and NBC news correspondent. She's also been a freelance writer for the New York Times. As a matter of fact, when I was born, her dad was the mayor of Minneapolis. How cool is that? And her uncle was on the Minnesota Supreme Court. So there you go. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yes. You know, I was so struck when I saw that terrorist attack in London, and I thought of that poor, poor mother that was wiped off the bridge on her way to pick up her two daughters, and I instantly thought of you. And I thought, my goodness, that's your story. And having you have such a different, such a varied perspective having lived in London as both a reporter and a Christian, and it struck me that a young mother with two daughters was killed in that horrible incident, and you raised two daughters in London, and you probably walked that bridge many times. So I'm curious about your response to all this.
Well, I certainly did walk on that bridge oftentimes to try to catch a bus from Lambeth Palace. That's where the Archbishop of Canterbury lives, and I was part of a fellowship group who met to support special outreach projects. And I tell you, London is a place that has always known terror. We were there from 1991, and I actually looked this up. I didn't even remember all the terror attacks that occurred in the 90s. Those were associated with the IRA. Of course, July 2005 are the bombings that everybody remembers. That's when they had those suicide attacks in the underground and on a bus. But even then, I don't remember ever being afraid about my safety or the safety of my children. I kept using public transport, and I think that was largely true for most people. I knew. We just came to accept it as part of living in a world city like London.
So the Brits, they're fairly resilient when it comes to dealing with the threat of terror attacks.
Yeah, I think when I think about London, though, I don't really necessarily think of the Brits, because like me, many people who are actually have British passports are not from Great Britain originally. And I like to say the world lives in London. Everybody is there from every nation. And I think collectively the residents are very resilient. They just go about their normal life, and they are not really bothered about it. Certainly it's something that people pray about, and the churches pray for all over the world. I got the news when I was actually in Hong Kong and I was on an air train, and Paul, my husband, wrote to say, this has happened. Pray for these people who have been hit on this in this terror attack on the bridge. But it's not something that causes me personal anxiety.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Have you had a chance to connect with some friends and business associates from London since the attack?
You know, I actually haven't. I got right on an airplane in Hong Kong and came over to the U.S. And so, you know, in the aftermath of that attack, I was not able to connect with anybody. And by the time I landed here, I get involved in my American life. And I can't say that the people I've been talking to day to day here in the last few days have been mentioning the attacks. The only person who I've communicated with was somebody who was visiting London at the time, and I'm going to actually see her today, so I'm sure we'll be talking about it.
Nice. Now, Jane, with such a strong Muslim presence in London, what was it like as a Christian, and how were you able to invite Muslim people into conversations about faith?
Well, our girls went to the French Lycée, and they had several Muslim friends. That France has a number of Muslim citizens, many of them coming from Northern Africa, and certainly they were part of every classroom. My daughter Claire particularly had close friends who were Muslims, and one of them actually just came and visited us in London, Zineb Lamricki from Morocco, and we had a lovely time, and we did talk about terrorism with her as an adult, now at age 23. But when we were in London, in this school, there obviously headscarves were prohibited, and so it wasn't that, you know, you were particularly identifying people of Muslim faith. And I met in a prayer triplet every Thursday with mothers, and we would pray for the school. I don't really remember that we were specifically praying about sharing our faith with Muslim families. Mm-hmm. There were plenty of concerns that we would pray about and people we would invite to faith conversations, but they tended to be people who had some sort of Catholic background.
Okay. Jane, the attacker in London was a native, and I know you're an extremely curious person, as a journalist. What kind of questions should we be thinking about and what questions we should be asking about this event?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I brought my mother to Westminster Church on Sunday, and as we walked in, we were listening to the call to prayer, the Muslim call to prayer. My mother was extremely confused, and it went on for about 3 minutes. But in that circumstance, there was an imam from Northern Minneapolis who was speaking with the senior minister in a dialogue situation instead of a sermon. And he was mentioning that many of these radicalized young males have experienced some deep pain in their lives. They have become very disillusioned. And I think that usually springs from poverty and from just being ostracized as being the other in any kind of society. And so I think that, you know, people need to befriend people of other faiths, smile and be friendly and warm-hearted, to show the love of Christ to them. Certainly in my mom's elderly residence, all of the helpers there who do a wonderful job are Muslim women. And I think we're called to be caring for them and friendly with them. And that's the extending the love of Christ on a friendship level. And certainly if it goes deeper, that's great. But I can't personally recall that I've had a lot of discussions with Muslims about my Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
in Singapore, we've got a Religious Harmony Act that prohibits anybody from denigrating anyone's religion. And that is, you can be jailed, for instance, if you're a minister in a pulpit saying anything against Islam. So it's a society that is largely peaceful and very careful about respecting the rights of others when it comes to faith issues.
Mm-hmm. So, Jane, you and your husband live in Singapore right now. You've moved around a lot. It sounds like tax problems to me, but that's just my opinion.
Right.
But I know you're in town visiting your 100-year-old mother, so have a great day, and thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye, Jane. It's 56 minutes after the hour. We will be back in just a minute. Cure is a network of charitable hospitals and specialty programs serving in 30 countries where medical care is often most needed and least available. In the places where Cure serves, children with disabilities are often viewed as cursed. Together, we can help heal children with disabilities and let them know they are not cursed. They are loved by God. Visit myfaithradio.com to learn more about Cure, and you can help bring healing to a child in the name of Jesus. And this spring, join Faith Radio as we make the commitment to choose joy no matter what. We're giving away one copy of Kay Warren's Choose Joy devotional every day leading up to Easter. With deep compassion, Bible teacher and speaker Kay Warren shares 30 devotions on how to choose joy in the midst of trial and draw closer to God, the true source of all of our joy. And to sign up to win, go to myfaithradio.com. I think we're giving one away every day. How exciting is that? I think I might win that one today. Or I'll just maybe take it. Be nice to have one. All right. We got a great second hour coming up. We will be back in just a minute. We're going to talk to Dr. Den Hartog, professor.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.